One of the great gifts that baptism confers upon Gavin, assuming, and I have no reason not to, that his parents will keep bringing him to church to hear the scriptures, is that Gavin will never have to spend any time wondering about his true purpose in life. In fact, that problem, if it exists, should be resolved for all of us this morning as we listen to Jesus' summary of God's commandments for human life. According to the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus was approached several different times by people who claimed to be searching for answers to their spiritual quest, but in reality were playing mind games or attempting to trap Jesus into saying something that might get him in trouble. They liked to pretend that they were on an honest spiritual quest, but in fact their strategy was actually to try to preserve their own comfortable position. On this occasion, they pushed forward a scholar, someone who knew the books of religious law backward and forward. This is Matthew chapter 22, verses 34 through 40. When the Pharisees heard that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together. And one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question to test him. "Teacher, which commandment in the law is the greatest?" Jesus said to them, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment, and a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." Jesus isn't interested in the Pharisees' posturing, though he does know what they're up to. He simply takes their question at face value and answers it. According to Jesus, the answer to the question, how does God want us to live, is not complicated. We are God's people. Therefore, our purpose in life, what God asks of us, is to love God with heart and soul and mind, and to love our neighbor as ourselves. The only thing that we have to figure out is what form that love is going to take. To illustrate love of neighbor, Jesus once told a story about a man who in the ancient world was considered to be somewhat of a second-class citizen. This man came to the rescue of a robbery victim, however, and actually paid for the wounded traveler's treatment and care until he was fully recovered. If Jesus were drawing examples from the world today, he might add the story of Christina Noble to that other famous story of the Good Samaritan. Christina was born 2 days before Christmas in 1944 in Dublin, Ireland. Her mother held the family together and cared for the children while the father fought and drank. When Christina was 10, her mother died. At that point, she was separated from her brothers and sent to an institute for orphaned and abandoned children. That place was so miserable that after 4 years, she ran away. She lived on the streets long enough to be brutalized by gangs of homeless boys. Finally, she managed to be reunited with her brother, and she joined him in England. She married and had 3 children of her own. Unfortunately, the cycle of abuse began to repeat itself at the hands of Christina's husband. After suffering a great deal of violence, Christina was hospitalized with severe depression. The story does not really take a turn for the better until, at the age of 45, Christina makes a journey to Vietnam. Christina chose Vietnam as a destination because a dream she had as a young woman had been haunting her for nearly 20 years. Back in 1971, with the news media full of horrible images from that country, Christina had dreamed vividly of children running in fear and reaching out to her for help. "You might laugh at that," she wrote later. "You might say it was nothing but a dream, and only someone who was Irish would act on a dream as if it were a message from God." It was 1989 when she finally acted on her dream. Having no formal education, no money, and no real idea of what she was going to do, she went to Ho Chi Minh City. There she saw little children dressed in rags, crouched in the dirt. At first she thought they were playing, But on closer observation, she discovered the children were so desperate for food that they were grubbing for ants in the dirt and eating them. One of these little girls reached out to her, wanting the touch of another human being. Christina embraced this child, and in that moment, she found her avenue for loving neighbor and loving God. With grants from small businesses, Christina began to create a center for the care of street children. She empathized deeply with their plight because it had once been her own. That center began with the ability to take care of a few children on an inpatient basis and a number of children on an outpatient basis. And over the last 15 years, it has become several shelters and schools and clinics and nutrition centers. Not only has Christina been making a profound difference in the lives of hundreds, maybe thousands of children, her own life has been transformed as well. The poor and the crippled, that poor and crippled country became the place for my salvation, Christina says. That became the place where I could regain hope and rebuild my life. We are born to love. And when Christina finally found a place that her love could be freely dispensed, it was tremendously healing for her and for those that she continues to help. Not only that, but in forming a charitable foundation to support her work, Christina created a way for others to express their love, even when they cannot go all the way to Vietnam to serve a meal or hold a child. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. We are born to love. And staying true to our purpose is literally what makes life worth living. A researcher associated with the University of Michigan has evaluated data from a 5-year study of 423 elderly couples. She discovered in reviewing all the data collected over this 5-year period that helping others, even in ways as simple as giving emotional support to a family member, helping others was correlated with a death rate half that of people who were not engaged in helping others. In other words, there is actual evidence that loving your neighbor will make you live longer. Loving your neighbor, even by helping those right around you with errands, housework, childcare, or daily tasks that they cannot manage on their own, could extend your life. The testimony of Lucille Brown reinforces this research. Lucille was a member of this congregation who lived to be more than 100 years old. When asked the secret of her longevity, which happened to her repeatedly in her last years, people would want to know, what is the secret to living to be 100 years old? She said, things come and go, even people come and go from all of our lives. But I always find somebody to love. I can always find someone new to love. An insurance broker in Boston completes a long day's work every Monday by going to a drop-in center for people with AIDS and helping to serve a meal. The broker undertakes this service in order to freely do something constructive for others in a setting very different from the business world. At the same time, it is also true that in the broker's own words, by the end of the evening, I feel not tired, but refreshed. I feel better if I'm doing something good. We are born to love. And so it happens that by following God's commandment to love God and love our neighbor, we feel happier and more fulfilled than if we just live for ourselves. God does not command us to do something unnatural or torturous for us. God made us to find joy in loving others. God commands us to do exactly what will be good for us and good for the world. Loving God and loving our neighbor does not require anything beyond the intellect, time, kindness, resources, and know-how that we already have. We can do it just as we are. We can get better at it as we go along. In fact, Sometimes we may not even realize until later that our natural instinct to do something practical, to take some specific action on behalf of others, was in fact an expression of divine love. Dr. Courtney Cowart, teacher and resident in New York City, has been working to collect and tell the story of what happened at St. Paul's Chapel in the aftermath of the attack on the World Trade Center. Standing very near the site of the devastation, but not damaged itself, St. Paul's was able to open its doors to the rescue workers who came to dig through the rubble of the collapsed buildings. By this I mean literally and simply that St. Paul's kept the door to its prayer space unlocked and open so that anyone who needed to could come in for a time of quiet rest and perhaps gain a brief respite from the shock and the horror. Because rescue workers were coming into St. Paul's for solace, volunteers began to show up there as well, spontaneously. First came cooks who prepared meals for the rescue workers. Then came people bringing clean clothes. Then came massage therapists setting up their tables, musicians prepared to offer music, podiatrists with expertise and supplies to tend to the feet of the recovery workers whose boots were actually starting to melt because the rubble was still so hot. Dr. Cowart has talked to many of these volunteers. She's been surprised to find one word keeps coming up over and over again as people attempt to describe their experience. That word is love. People keep saying to me, she reports, that what they experienced in that chapel was an overwhelming love, a love beyond anything they've ever known before or since, a love that they feel was and still is transforming them. Our true purpose is to love. Love God and love our neighbor. When we begin to behave according to our purpose, it takes our lives to a whole new level of meaning. Love is not necessarily grand or glorious. Very often, love is humble, simple, and nearly invisible. However, no matter how small our gestures of love, they always make a difference. David Chadwell tells the story of a cement-making operation located near the equator. Due to the intense heat of the dry season, the most unpopular job on the premises was the one that involved climbing up onto the roof each day to sweep off the accumulated dust. This job had to be done every day for 6 months until the rainy season began, and then for 6 months it became unnecessary. Years went by with the routine kept up and the job of roof sweeping done, until a season came in which there was a change of management. It was still the case that nobody liked to sweep the roof, and now nobody could remember why such an apparently ridiculous assignment existed anyway. To streamline operations and improve labor relations, the roof sweeping job was eliminated. A thick layer of dust accumulated on the roof, but everyone was glad to stay in the shade down below. 6 months passed, and the rainy season began. The rain mixed with the factory dust and created cement. The roof collapsed. Our simple acts of love may actually be saving lives. Our simple acts of love, like but not limited to the ones listed on the green piece of paper in your bulletin this morning, our simple acts of love, even when unrecognized, may actually be saving lives, our own and others. I encourage us all to trust Jesus and to believe him when he says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment. And a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." Eternal God, we put our trust in you now. For indeed, we would like truth and good and right to triumph over wrong. We thank you this morning for parents with faith to bring their baby forward, to trust him into your care and baptize him in your name. And we pray that their faith might be an inspiration to us, and that our faith this day might be strengthened and deepened. And Lord, as we gather under gray skies and gentle mist, we're so very aware of places in the world where storms have been severe and earthquakes have been devastating. And Lord, when it seems as though one disaster follows another and we're not sure how much more we can give, help us to remember your unending love, your limitless grace, and your continual availability to us, so that as we trust you for courage and hope and resources, indeed we find that when we give, our cup fills up once more. We thank you for the joy and privilege of being here today to worship you. We know how blessed we are to be able to join our voices together in praying the prayer that Jesus taught us. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen.